of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword. I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ because it's the power of God unto salvation. And Sister Vincent, my buttons on my coat were just burst open when I rejoiced at the news last night. And the number of young people over the last year or two here who have opened their mouth without any shame and have said, I believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God. I know what it's like to hear that said, and I know what it's like to hear your daughter say that. And it's just wonderful, wonderful. And I'll tell you,
if you've come into the presence of God tonight, I hope it's with the intent to glorify Him. And I hope that you've come into the presence of God tonight with a heart ready to receive God's truth designed to prick the heart, to change the mind, and to transform us, to conform us more into the image of His dear Son. But I would have you to understand that if 7:30 tonight is the first time today that you have had a heart for God, or the first time today that you have had a receptive ear for what God would desire for you to hear through His Word, or if 7:35 tonight was the first time that you communicated with God in prayer, you did not equip yourself this morning to deal with life under the sun as you wage war against sin and the forces of darkness. Please, ladies and gentlemen, every day that God gives you breath, and you take your head off the pillow, you thank God for life, every good and perfect gift that comes from above. And you give Him time early in the day each day with you. Communicate with Him in prayer. Thank you for being here tonight. I realize schedules are hectic for so many of you. You're here tonight because you want to be here. You're here tonight because you love God, and you're here tonight because you want to hear what the Spirit of God has to say through His Word. And I thank you for that. Brother Ledbetter, for the fine leadership tonight in song, and all of you who have sung tonight, I thank you for that. Will you go with me to Luke's Gospel in chapter 6? We want to go there together. The Gospel of Luke in chapter 6. Again tonight, I'm going to be reading from the New King James Version. Luke chapter 6, we're going to go to the text beginning in verse 37. So you say you're a disciple. Well, let's examine ourselves as we deal with that point. Gospel of Luke in chapter 6, beginning in verse 37, Jesus says, judge not, and you shall not be judged. Condemn not, and you shall not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it shall be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your bosom. For with the same measure that you use, it shall be measured back to you. And He spoke a parable to them. Can the blind lead the blind? Will they not both fall into the ditch? A disciple is not above his teacher, but everyone who is perfectly trained will be like his teacher. Drop down to verse 46. But why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do the things which I say? Whoever comes to me and hears my sayings and does them, I will show you whom he is like. He is like a man building a house who dug deep and laid the foundation on the rock. When the flood arose and the stream beat vehemently against the house, could not shake it, for it was founded on the rock. But he who heard and did nothing is like a man who built a house on the earth without a foundation.
against which the stream beat vehemently, and immediately it fell. And the ruin of that house is great. I want to ask you tonight, do you recognize this image on the screen? I think most of us, if not all of us, do. Whether you live in Texas or Louisiana or the United States or China, when you see this image on the screen, you recognize what it represents and what it stands for. It's the Golden Arches. It's McDonald's. And you know exactly what to expect when you go to McDonald's. You go to McDonald's, but it's not to check out a book. It's not a library. You don't go to McDonald's expecting to have your oil changed. In fact, they don't even change their oil. It's not Jiffy Lube. You don't go to McDonald's expecting to have a prescription filled. It's not a pharmacy. You don't go to McDonald's for any other reason other than hamburgers and french fries and chicken nuggets. Everybody knows what McDonald's represents. So what's the point? Well, the point is, what comes to your mind? What do you think when you see the term disciple? What do you think about when someone says discipleship? What were you thinking when you heard announced the lesson tonight is so you say you are a disciple? What Jesus was doing in the reading of Luke chapter 6 is He was teaching on discipleship. He wanted those who were following Him and those who would be followers of Him, and thereby, by extension to us, and following Him, to understand the concept of what it means to be a disciple. And so He's talking about sacrifice, and He's talking about servitude. He's talking about demeanor, and He talks about devotion. He's talking about reverence and respect for He who is Lord, and the attitude of heart that we ought to have in response to Him and to what He has said. You see, that term disciple literally means a learner. It denotes one who follows another's teaching. And so in practical terms, what I would have you to understand tonight about disciple, being a disciple of Christ, is that a disciple of Christ seeks to be a learner of Christ and desires to follow after Christ. Now, answer the question, are you a disciple of Christ? Jesus said in Luke chapter 6 and verse 40, everyone who is perfectly trained will be like his teacher. Everyone who is perfectly trained, everyone who is thoroughly instructed will be like his teacher. And what that says to me, among other things, is I cannot be like Jesus Christ until I desire to be trained by Him. I cannot be like Jesus Christ until I have the attitude of heart and the disposition of mind that I want someone to teach me how He lived, Jesus Christ, how He acted, how He reacted, and how He went about doing good and doing His Father's will. And that's the attitude of heart that I want to adopt. So if you're dealing with folks that don't want to study the life of Christ, and if you're dealing with people who call themselves Christian, but they don't intend on living like Christ and loving like Christ loved, and serving as He served, and giving as He gave, those are not people who can honestly say and biblically declare, I'm a disciple of Jesus Christ. Now the question for all of us tonight is, do you want to be perfectly trained? Do I want to be thoroughly instructed in regards to what Jesus said concerning discipleship? Jesus said in the Gospel of John in chapter 8, verses 31 and 32, if you abide in My Word, then are you My disciples indeed. Condition, if you abide in My Word, then are you My disciples indeed. You ask, well, what's the goal? What's the point? Why do you have a lesson? Well, the goal of discipleship is to be like Christ. There's a song that we have sung
in our churches for many, many years.
I believe the title of the song is Old to Be Like Thee.
Think about the words of that great song. Oh, to be like Thee, blessed Redeemer. This is my constant longing and prayer. Gladly, I'll forfeit all of the earth's treasures. Jesus, Thy perfect likeness to wear. And what I have to do tonight, in reflection upon the words of that great hymn, is to ask myself the question, honestly, is that the constant longing of my heart? To be like Christ. So you say you're a disciple.
Well, let's get into practicalities tonight. As disciples of Jesus Christ, our practice must be in line with our profession. As disciples of Jesus Christ, so you say you're a disciple. Well, test yourself. Is your practice in line with your profession? We say it in terms to young people, you need to walk the talk.
And I think young people understand what we mean by that.
My dad used to say, practice what you preach. And for good reason at times. We need to think about that. Tony Campolo,
who is a renowned author and professor of psychology, sociology, he has a book entitled Following Jesus Without Embarrassing God. Following Jesus Without Embarrassing God. I don't have the book. I haven't read the book. But some good friends of mine have the book and have read the book. But what I find interesting, several of the chapter headings in that book entitled Following Jesus Without Embarrassing God, listen to some of the chapter headings of this book. How to Have a Devotional Life Without Becoming a Monk. That makes you want to buy the book. How to Protect Yourself from Technology Without Becoming Amish. I can't think up titles like that. I couldn't sell a book if I wanted to. But I think the title, How to Follow Jesus Without Embarrassing God, is something we ought to think about. I guess if I were writing a book and putting a title, I'd kind of be old school. I would just say, How to Live in the World Without Living for the World. My dad used to say that all the time. Takes you back to the passage in Romans chapter 12, beginning verse 1. The Apostle Paul said, I beseech you, I entreat you by the sure mercies of God that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be you transformed by the renewing of your mind,
so that you may prove that which is good, acceptable, the perfect will of God. You be transformed, Paul says, Romans 12 and verse 2. Well, what's going to be necessary for this proper transformation to take place? What must come first in order for the transformation that the Apostle Paul is talking about in Romans chapter 12 to come about? I'll tell you, he tells us, by the renewing of your mind. You change the way that you think. And you take every thought captive and make it obey Jesus Christ. And you control your thoughts and you're on your way to controlling your actions. Practice what you preach. You walk the talk. You make sure that your practice is in line with your profession. Paul couches it, the Apostle Paul, in these terms, Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 1, walk worthy of the calling wherewith you have been called. That's a worthy walk. That's how disciples walk. Fully pleasing the Lord, Colossians 1 and verse 10. Romans 13 and verse 13, walk properly. That means let your conduct be appropriate for one who claims to be a follower of Jesus Christ. And I like the Apostle John. His exhortation in 1 John and in 2 John. That term walk comes up on several occasions. 1 John chapter 1 and verse 7, walk in the light as He is in the light. That's what disciples must do. Walk as Christ walked. Walk in truth, 2 John verse 4. Walk in love, 2 John verse 6. Disciples must not say one thing with their lips and live something totally different in their everyday lives.
It does not bring honor to God.
Paul spoke in plain terms to the Jews when he got to chapter 2 in Romans. I mean, he said some hard things to the Gentiles, those pagan folks, and needed to say that in Romans chapter 1. And I can just imagine the Jews were thinking, boy, I'm glad somebody's telling the Gentiles what they needed to hear. And Paul turns it right around in Romans chapter 2 and puts it squarely on the shoulders of the Jews because of their hypocrisy. You see, what they were doing is they were judging those Gentiles worthy of God's wrath when they themselves were practicing some of the very same sins. Apostle Paul in Romans chapter 2 and verse 23 said, "You who make your boast in the law, do you dishonor God through breaking law?" And imagine what a hard pill that was for the Jew to swallow. What are you saying is, listen, you folks, you boast in the fact that you have God's law revealed to you, given to you by God, but he said you don't practice it. You don't live by it. Romans 2 still, verse 21 and 22. "You therefore who teach another, do you not teach yourself? You who preach that one should not steal, do you not steal? You who say that one should not commit adultery, do you not commit adultery? You who abhor idols," he says, "do you not rob temples?" What's the point? Well, the point that Paul is making is it's not the possession of the law that counts. It's the practice of the law. Now, I'm not telling you we're under Mosaic law today, but we're under law to Christ. We're under a better covenant based upon better promises. But still, we cannot become the spiritual Israel of today and say, well, God has spoken to us through His Spirit. God has revealed His Word to us in totality, whereby when we read, we may understand what to do in order to please God and by grace inherit the promised land of Canaan, the Sabbath rest of God. I wonder how many times God wants to know, "Yeah, but why aren't you practicing what you know to be the truth?" You go around preaching to a lot of folks, and you go around teaching a lot of people, and you can spew forth the truth, but do you live by what you preach? One writer says, "We're challenged these days, but not changed. We are convicted, but not converted. We come and hear, but we do not, and thereby we deceive ourselves." Disciples of Jesus Christ will practice the truth, not just preach it. As disciples of Jesus Christ, we must pursue those qualities that we know God has told us will make for stronger Christians. So you say you're a disciple. Are you diligently pursuing those qualities, those characteristics that God has clearly told you and told me that will make you spiritually stronger, a better follower of Jesus Christ? This is not a message for sinners in the street. This is a message for saints in the pew. Go with me to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. I want you to see this. Well, see, technology is a wonderful thing, but I'm behind. I'm used to my clicker at home. All right. Everybody catch up with me while you're turning pages. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Notice verse 15. "See that no one renders evil for evil to anyone, but always pursue what is good, both for yourselves and for all." You know, that's contrary to the mentality of so many people in the world. And I wonder if that way of thinking hasn't found its way into the church, where folks begin to think that life is about me. It's all about me.
This is what I've chosen. This is the life that I've chosen to live. And it's my business and it's none of your business. And after all, if I make a mess out of my life, it's not going to hurt anybody but me. That's going to be perfect. Holy Spirit of God through the Apostle Paul says, you pursue. You follow what is good. But you follow what is good, what is right, what is profitable, not only for yourself, but for others. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 22. Flee also youthful lusts. Pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 11 adds to the list godliness and patience and gentleness. Notice a couple of things in those passages. There's the obligation to flee, to run away from. Now, he says in the context, you flee youthful lust. But that's not the only time in the New Testament that we see this language or this term flee. We're told to flee youthful lust. We talked about that. Flee sexual immorality. Flee idolatry. I hope our young people are understanding the importance of fleeing sexual immorality. Maybe you heard about the African safari. A guy who came in contact with a reporter, and the reporter asked this African safari guy, he said, listen, is it true that wild beasts will not harm you if you carry a torch? Is it really true that wild beasts will not harm you if you carry a torch? And the African safari guy said, well, it just depends on how fast you carry the torch. You just have to run away. You have to flee. A wise man is cautious and turns away from evil. But a fool is arrogant and careless. Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 16. Cautious. Turns away from evil. That's wisdom. It's foolishness to become arrogant and conceited to the point where we convince ourselves, I convince myself, I can play around with this. And not yield to temptation and thereby sin. Listen. I can hire this secretary. I can take her to lunch. I can go behind closed doors and have inappropriate conversation, cross the line with the opposite sex. But you know what? It's not going to lead to adultery. It won't lead to fornication. I can handle it. That's just dumb. D-U-M-B, dumb. I can read the bill. I can watch the ungodly movies on the movie screen and just deal with that the way we used to eat watermelon in my granddad's garden. That is, you just spit out the seeds, what you don't like and what you know not you don't want to eat. We just kind of think, well, we can watch all this filth and just run it through a filter and it not affect the way that we think and thereby affect the way that we live. When we dwell on ungodliness, when we fill our mind with ungodly lyrics, when you feed the flesh lust-filled images, you don't flee from the presence and the form of what God calls evil. We need to say with the psalmist in Psalm 101 and verse 3, I will set nothing wicked before my eyes. But when you flee and you run away from what is considered ungodly and unrighteous and dangerous, you follow. You pursue diligently. after. And the text says you follow and you pursue diligently after righteousness, that character or quality of being right or just. Pursue right living. Godliness, respect and reverence for God. Faith, fidelity in this context, I'm convinced, and loyalty before God. Love in its highest form, to the highest degree. Love that desires to do right and be right. It's a love of decision and choice, not emotion or feeling. It's keeping a promise. It's fulfilling commitment. It's giving. And patience. Follow after Paul said patience, steadfastness, constancy, endurance. The steadfastness to do what is right even when most everyone else does what is wrong. Steadfastness, determination, endurance to bear up under stress and strain, temptation and peer pressure. It's persevering through adversity when life is hard. Life is hard for some of you tonight. We'll talk about it if the Lord gives us Friday night together. We're going to talk about suiting up in the armor of God and walking in victory through the strength that God provides. Thanks be to God, He hasn't left us this side of eternity to work out our salvation with fear and trembling without a promise that He will be with us and that He will help us and He will strengthen us. Some of us need constancy, determination in the face of adversity, that by the grace of God, we will not walk away from God, because we know God is true and faithful. Gentleness. So you say you're a disciple. Do you follow after gentleness? Slow to retaliate in the face of provocation. Strength that has been properly harnessed. Strength under control. Power under control. Gentleness. Pursue those qualities that make for stronger Christians. Listen to the Apostle Peter and we'll move to the next point. And besides all of this, 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 5, and besides all of this, giving all diligence, remember I said pursue, follow after, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue knowledge. Knowledge temperance, to temperance patience, to patience godliness, to godliness brotherly kindness, to brotherly kindness love. For if these things be in you and abound, they make that you be neither barren nor unfruitful. But he who lacketh these things is blind, cannot see afar off, and has forgotten that he was purged from his old sins. Wherefore, the rather, brethren, give all diligence to make your calling and election sure. For if you do these things, you shall never fall. The admonition, ladies and gentlemen, is you pursue with all diligence those qualities and characteristics that God says will make you fruitful. So do you pursue diligently after righteousness and godliness and faith and love and patience and gentleness, brotherly kindness? Do you pursue diligence? And I will tell you, ladies and gentlemen, you will not seek diligently after what you are not first convinced will do you the utmost good. You will not seek passionately after anything or anyone that you are not convinced that is a matter of life and death. I emphasize seeking after passionately. And point number 3. As disciples, we must keep our proper perspective clear while living in an out-of-focus world. Those are some of the things that we've been talking about. Having a heavenly focus. Paul said in Colossians chapter 3, verses 1 and 2, if then you were raised with Christ, you seek those things which are above, where Christ sits at the right hand of God. Set your mind or your affection on things above and not on things of this earth. For you are dead and your life is hidden with Christ in God. Language of the Apostle Paul in Philippians chapter 3 and verse 14, I press. I press toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. The Apostle Peter in 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 13 said, gird up the loins of your mind and rest your hope fully upon the grace that is to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Rest your hope fully upon the grace that is to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. It's a press toward the upward goal, the prize. It's a press toward heaven. But we have to be diligent to enter that rest. The rest the Hebrew writers call about in this passage, Hebrews 4 and verse 11, as I said to you, that's the Sabbath rest of God. That's heaven. Next time you sing the song, to Canaan's land, I'm on my way, where the soul never dies, where the soul never dies, does that stir your heart? Next time you sing the song, we are bound for Canaan's land, does that stir your heart? There's a lot of bad people in this world. And there's a lot of bad things going on in this world, darkness. Because, ladies and gentlemen, sin still abounds. We weren't created in the image of God with a soul that never dies, with the intent that we make earth our home. We're pilgrims. God expects from His people who call themselves Christian, God expects from those who claim to be followers, disciples of Jesus Christ, that we adopt, because we understand, that pilgrim mindset. This world is not our home. We're just passing through. Our citizenship is in heaven, the language of the Apostle Paul. But we must keep our focus on the goal. We must press toward the prize and do so with both great fervency and endurance. This is just my thought, and you can take it as such. I don't know about you, but this is my thought. I don't believe there are going to be a whole lot of folks lost, separated from God for all eternity because of murder. There will be those, no doubt. I don't think there are going to be just a great number of those who will lose their soul because of the sin of envy. I do believe there will be a great number who will lose their soul because of sexual immorality. And don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm concerned with whatever the reason puts someone's soul in jeopardy. I'm greatly troubled. I'm very concerned for those that are in danger of losing their soul because they've cast away their confidence. They grew weary in well-doing. They once had a heart for God. They once had a passion for God. They once had a love for the lost. But the flame of love for the Lord and that fervency have been extinguished. And they're not serving the Lord anymore.
They threw in the towel.
They gave up. I hope that's not you. I understand things that weigh us down. I understand some of how the devil works in this world to defeat us through discouragement and depression, pessimism, defeatism. We cannot throw in the towel. But we must keep our focus on the goal. Ladies and gentlemen, there's not anyone. And there's not anything that should separate us, that we should allow to separate us from the love of God which is in Jesus Christ. There is not anything or anyone that we should allow to pull our mind off of things that are eternal and take our hearts away from He who gave His life for us and redeemed us with His blood. Is your greatest allegiance, is your greatest love for Jesus the Christ who died for you? Do you practice what you preach? Are you pursuing those qualities that will make you a stronger Christian? And will you maintain a heavenly focus and keep your eyes on the goal, the prize, heaven? I close with this. It's a song, I think it may be 109 in the songbooks you're using. Here, the title is Higher Ground. As you sing the song, the next time you sing the song, Higher Ground, I would have you to understand that this song, I'm convinced, involves at least two things. The song, Higher Ground. It involves both a prayer and a commitment. It involves a prayer because when we sing it, if we sing it from the heart, we sing it with gratitude in our hearts. It involves a prayer because we're invoking the name of the Lord in the language, Lord, lift me up. Lord, help me stand. Lord, plant my feet on higher ground. We're calling upon God to do something for us, to work in and through us to His glory, that we might be more conformed to the image of His dear Son and by His grace receive the promised rest. But it also involves a commitment. It involves a commitment to ourselves and a commitment to God to press toward heaven and to be watchful in prayer.
Are you a learner of Jesus Christ? Are you a follower of Jesus Christ? Are you a disciple?